Good afternoon. Welcome to Eating It in the Hudson Valley. I'm Phyllis Segura, your host. Today's topic is farm to school. I'd like you all to remember what the food was like in the educational institutions you attended. A lot of people in New York State have slowly been working towards bettering the fare and not just having food made from scratch, but also having more local products that come from actual farms in New York State. And we have today we have good news and bad news. There was actually a farm-to-school law passed in 2002 under the jurisdiction of the Department of Agriculture and Markets and the State Education Department to facilitate and purchase New York farm products by schools, universities, and other educational institutions. Today, I'm happy to have with us a few people who have been working on getting the news out and seeing that the farm-to-school initiative becomes reality. There are two aspects, as far as I can see, for farm to school. One is getting products from farms into the cafeteria, and the other is getting a garden in each school that can produce some vegetables for the school and can let students in on the joke that vegetables actually come from a garden and not a package. Nikki Kagan is here and has been working with this topic since about 2010 with her organization From the Ground Up. She started with a grant to study the feasibility of farm-to-school into the Roundout Valley School District in Ulster County. Nikki will tell us how she got started with this and about her new program, Girls for Real Food at Girls, Inc., at the YWCA Ulster County, and how the project is going in Ulster County. Also with us is Nikki's colleague in the Battle of Fruits and Vegetables, Sandy McKelvey, who came all the way from Cold Spring to speak with us. Sandy created Hudson Valley Farm to School, augmented with Chef in the Classroom programs and school-wide taste test days so students could taste vegetables and fruits they were unfamiliar with generally. Both women have worked with the Department of Agriculture and Markets, and we will hear about that too. Also with us is Kevin Flanagan, a teacher at the Germantown School in Columbia County. Kevin oversees the garden there, though he is the school speech pathologist. He also facilitates the garden club with a hearty number of students involved. Kevin will tell us about that and how it got started and what the students learn from having a raised bed garden on the premises, and soon a greenhouse, I hear. And I've got some information about the Sylvia Center's plans with the school. I'm so happy to have all of you here. I really,
Thank you. Even though
we rushed to the beginning here, it's always tricky here to make sure that people get here on time. We never know. So, Nikki, why don't we start with you?
Yes, Phyllis.
I understand that the Roundout School District has a lot of gardens.
We have gardens at every school.
How'd you do that?
It takes some dedicated parents and committed teachers. And not to ever forget the custodial staff, because they're the ones who really help you make that happen.
Here, here.
Yeah, so it really happened because one parent, Rich LaSalvia, came up to me and said, there's another mom who really wants to start a garden, and you know how to start a garden. Could you do that? And I said, sure, because I was committed to finding a group of people that could work together to make a difference. And this was one way that I could make a difference for my entire community. And so we went to work, two of us.
What year was that?
A long time ago, Phyllis. Long ago. Now I'm older and wiser and not as rebellious and know how to work with the system a little bit better. You know, smoothed out.
right. So it was around 2010?
Yeah, and let's see, I had a child who was, actually it might have been earlier, because my child is now 16, so I started, about 10 years ago.
Okay.
In there.
Yeah, yeah.
Had a big mouth.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, three people became 40 people. And then I connected with Noah Sheets, who was then the former governor's executive chef, who had
Governor
a mandate.
Governor Patterson then.
Yes.
So that is a long time ago.
Mandate to bring more New York State local food into the school districts, colleges, everything you said. And to really make a difference in the health and the well-being of our children of New York State.
Well, the Roundout District is an example, but a lot of places, like I've called around to food service directors. And let's say in Hudson, where mm-hmm. there's a new food service director, Brian, they're in my notes, I'll tell you later. But he's just starting. And I tried to find gardens that were in Columbia County, and the garden at Germantown was really the only one that I could find. That doesn't mean that they don't exist. I just couldn't find them.
Sure.
And the same for Greene County. I spoke to this food service director there, too. Actually, with him, we decided that we're going to revisit this in April.
Oh, so we have more work to do.
Well, yeah, for more gardens. But see what happens, how the school year goes for the food service directors, both in Columbia and Greene and other places in Ulster County.
Sure.
So what was the first garden?
The first garden happened at Marbletown Elementary School. It happened in a beautiful spot right outside of the cafeteria. So it was convenient to bring some of our produce into the cafeteria to be served, augment some of the meals.
Uh-huh.
All kinds of wonderful challenges were met. And
What?
Oh.
Just one.
One. Well, my favorite one was when I swarmed all the fruit flies because I thought it was spectacular. I mean, I knew that they were not going to hurt the kids, and so I went to the compost and I took my hands and I whooshed them over the top, and all of the fruit flies went swarming into the air. It was really thrilling. Little did I know they went into the univents of the school.
Ooh.
And so the nurse's office is also right next to the garden. And it was a hot day, and her curtain was down. And the custodial staff person came in and said, "Let me open that for you." And he said, no, don't. And when he did, all of the fruit flies had congregated under that, and she was protecting us. So that was very sweet. So we learned that it's best not to have your compost right next to your univents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many, many things are learned by mistakes.
Yes, indeed. I always say that...
True story.
So what was the good news?
The good news is that the district has gardens in every school, that the program has been taken up.
How many schools are there?
There are three schools. Turned
okay.
into four. Four That's schools.
Three. Right.
And
so one had one, and then the rest of them got jealous
right.
and wanted to have them too? Or
I think that, you know, it makes sense that children are connected to their food system, and most parents understand that. And so the effort comes from the parent, and as I'm learning now, the true effort for change comes from the students themselves.
Uh-huh.
So now this is an integrated part of their learning system, and they can now advocate for themselves. And so that's what I do with the Girls Inc. program. We work to advocate.
Now, is that in the same schools? What's Girls Inc.?
Yeah, well, Girls Inc. Of Ulster and Dutchess was, and I hope I get all my facts right, was founded by Mary Farrell in our area, and she asked me to help her with a program, and we created a program called Girls for Real Food,
uh-huh.
where we teach girls to be bold, brave, and strong, and to advocate for their own systems. So we have a 22-week program at Roundout,
mm-hmm.
where we teach the girls how to advocate for food. We teach them about how the system works, how to appeal to the board, what recipes are doable, who the farmers are in the region, and we let them create their own program.
And this goes to the food service director?
The food service director is involved. I just got off the phone, email, with Chris Van Dam, our food service director, and he has opened our high school kitchen to our group, which is awesome because it really gives the girls a hands-on experience as to how the food system works.
So they can actually go into the kitchen?
We'll be working there. It's an after-school program.
Uh-huh.
We'll be working right out of the kitchen.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll get a little bit more later about how the first groundbreaking actually occurred.
Certainly.
But let's talk to Sandy.
Yes.
My mind blanks, you know, sometimes. But you've been doing it a very long time as well. How did this get started for you?
Well, so I live in Cold Spring, New York, mm-hmm. and I moved up there with my family in 2009, and I was living in the city, and we moved up, and my daughter was going to begin kindergarten, and I had been a local foods advocate in New York City, belonged to CSAs, and, you know, really wanted to do something that was meaningful in the schools. And so I had no idea what farm to school was at the time in 2009, but I was volunteering at my CSA, the new CSA I was a member of. And one of the farm apprentices said, "Hey, you know, you got to check out Farm to School. It's a national initiative. It's a cool thing." And he said, "Just go to the website and learn about it." So that's what I did. I started my education by doing a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. I went onto the National Farm to School website, which is, if anyone wants to learn about it, it's National Farm to School. Farmtoschool.org mm-hmm. is the name of it. And there was a toolkit that was produced by Cornell University that was the, you know, Bible, the manual, the how-to manual for Farm to School, about 200 pages, read the whole book, and I said, we got to do this at my kids' local school. So in 2009, I joined the wellness committee at Haldane Elementary School, mm-hmm. and I said, I'd like to start a Farm to School program here. And
what'd they say?
Well, initially, there wasn't really anything.
They didn't know what I was talking about.
And there was tremendous pushback. As a matter of fact, I remember back in that first September of that year, they said, when I said I'd like to look in the kitchen, because part of the toolkit mm-hmm. says, you know, find out if your kitchen is a scratch kitchen, you know, which means a kitchen where they actually do real cooking.
Right.
Or if it's a warm up and serve kitchen, find out what the equipment they have is. And so I said, can I take a tour of the kitchen? They said, no. And I said, why? And they said, against regulations, parents are not allowed in the kitchen under no circumstances. So my first roadblock.
Did you dispel that?
Well, I just couldn't understand it, because in the toolkit I was reading, they said, parents are welcomed in, you know, the kitchens that they have been working in, and they also mentioned that parents would go and sit with their kids during lunch. They'd have a, you know, parents come to lunch and have lunch with their kids day just uh-huh. to see what's on the menu, and sure. they said, nope, can't do that. So I'm somebody that can't get my foot out of a door, so so I kept pursuing. Mm-hmm. And they let me do a little farm to school table at their yearly health fair. And I brought in a farmer, and we did some demonstrations on planting seedlings.
But you still hadn't gotten into the kitchen.
I had not gotten into the kitchen. But then by the end of the school year, they said, well, if you, and I said, well, what if we get a chef, a local chef who's willing to share some farm to school local recipes, you know, with the food service director, would that be okay? And they said, well, you know, maybe we'll try it once a month. And so as soon as we found a chef, the food service director said, oh, well, of course you can visit. And then I tagged along.
Mm-hmm. Good, so, done in the kitchen.
So I got into the kitchen because they let the chef in the kitchen. And then suddenly, apparently there was really no restrictions at all. It just was something that it was the principal just didn't want to do anything, didn't want to get anything started. But we started out a program in 2010 with what we call the monthly vegetable. And we would do a different locally sourced vegetable in the cafeteria each month. And the chef would come up with an interesting recipe that he thought would be, you know, kid-friendly and tasty.
And they demonstrated it in the cafeteria while the kids were eating, or a separate time?
No. So for the first month, we brought in a butternut squash dish. It was a very simple butternut squash roasted puree with maple syrup. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids really Yum. Liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. Very simple.
Right.
And then I said, you know, we've got this local chef who's really willing to do more. How about if we have him come into the classroom and do some cooking lessons? And they said, yeah, let's try it out. Mm-hmm. So we did a little pilot the first year, and the classes loved it. Right. They just thought it was so much fun. And then the teachers heard about it from the other teachers and said, oh, we want to have it in our classroom. So the following year, the school was able to get funding to have the chef come in every month and hit a different classroom. So by the end of the second year, every single classroom from K through 5 had the chef visit and demonstrate. Initially, it was a demonstration, but then we got into more hands-on cooking. It evolved into a program where the chef became the supervisor and the kids were doing all the cooking hands-on. Chef would bring in an induction stove and all the tools, kid-safe knives, et cetera, and the kids would complete the recipe, and they'd taste it in the classroom. We would do surveys, and then we would have the cafeteria make the same dish and then have the monthly taste test and survey that. And it became a real part of the school culture.
From what I've read from the research I did, and I did a lot of research on this,
you
actually.
You did, Phyllis. I know that.
The taste test that you did has I think you're the first one that did that, and I think that's taken over in other places as well.
Well, I don't want to take credit for being the first one to do it because, you know, the Farm to School Network is a really, it's a wonderful sharing network, and Nikki will attest to this, that we've gone to many national conferences where it's a sharing fest. Uh-huh. We will bring all our knowledge and share with each other. You know, we don't charge for anything. We, you know, we'll send them, if we have recipes, we'll send to them. If they have lesson plans, they'll send to us. And so I think, you know, the taste test is something that schools all over the country are doing. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. I don't want to minimize. It's not easy to organize them. Often schools will do it, you know, a few times a year, not every month, because it takes a lot of people power
really?
To get the volunteers to do it.
You don't just cut open a vegetable and say, here, taste it?
Well, you know, we don't do taste tests of just raw vegetables. We do dishes.
Yeah.
You know, and so they've got to be prepared. We have to make sure that it's something that kids can either pick up, or you can have it in a little serving cup, something that they can just sort of pop in their mouth, and it's got to be something that you're pretty sure they're going to like, because you don't want to have a taste test where everyone, you know, the survey says, you know, it's all right. Thumbs down.
No liver.
Well, horseradish.
Horseradish, that's right. Mm.
So the taste tests are really, I would say, one of the most important things in trying to encourage kids to eat, you know, healthier foods, more fruits and vegetables, because it's on their terms. You know, it's not, you know, in the cafeteria, you know, when the school food, you mm-hmm. are, you know, kids are required to take a fruit or a vegetable. That's part of the after 2010 with the reauthorization of the Healthy Kids Hunger-Free Act.
They have to take a fruit or a vegetable.
Right, as part to be considered a eligible for part of the National School Lunch Program.
Right.
And so if you don't take one, you know, you wouldn't be able to, wouldn't qualify as a meal. But even if you do take one, that doesn't mean you're going to eat it.
Right.
And of course, what people would, you know, would happen all the time is that the kids would take their fruit or their vegetable and it would go directly in the trash.
Right.
So what's the point? And so a lot of food service people would complain about these new guidelines because they said, we're wasting food.
Mm-hmm.
Why do this? The kids don't like it. Kids don't like fruits and vegetables. That's what they'd say.
Not
why are we doing this? And so...
Yeah.
And so whenever I'd hear that, I would...
Well, if they see it in the garbage, it means that the kid didn't like it. So
right.
how did you change that?
So I would, every time I hear adults say that, you know, I would just get so infuriated because, you know, nobody likes being told what to do. Adults don't like being told what to do. Kids don't like being told what to do. Kids
mm-hmm.
like to take charge of their lives
mm-hmm.
and to be involved and to be part of the decision-making. So... The beautiful thing about having a school garden and about having a cooking program is that the kids do it themselves. They take the initiative. And so they get curious. And if it's something that they grew or something that took them a long time to nurture...
Then we get to the garden.
And they see it in the garden growing. And then from the garden, they pick it in the garden and then they work with it. They cook it. This is something that's important to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they are engaged. They want to like it.
Good.
And that's the big difference, and that's why the taste tests have been so successful.
Let's get back to that. I would like to have a little commentary from Kevin, who isn't a food person per se.
A little bit, but
he came with his garlic.
I did.
Yeah, he brought me garlic from the garden.
He brought garlic from the garden.
So you've been working at the Germantown School.
I have.
And there's a garden there.
Yes.
And you were the facilitator for that garden.
Well, it wasn't started by me. Right. I have been working at the school. I'm starting my fourth year there.
Right.
When I got there, the library teacher, Kathy Dancy, was the garden club advisor. Now, I have a love for gardening just recreationally. My whole backyard is a garden. I love gardening. I mean, from fence to garage, it's all garden space pretty much. It's not big enough to consider a farm, but it's a pretty vast garden. I grow a lot of stuff. And when I found out that there was a garden club at Germantown, I'm thrilled because when you're a new staff, they encourage you to join committees or, you know, get involved. And gardening is definitely the place. So first year, I got my feet wet. And then the following year, I helped with the garden club. Kathy remained as the advisor, and then she retired. And, well, by default, I guess I was the next person up because, because I loved
doing it. Were there a lot of children in the garden club when she left?
There were close to about 20, I would say.
Oh, that's nice.
How big a garden is it?
We have a courtyard in the middle of the school. It's actually surrounded by brick. It's in the middle of the school, which is kind of nice because the only pests we really get is birds. Rabbits and squirrels can't get there, and a groundhog would have to be one heck of a burrower to to be able to go under the basement of the school and get to the garden. So it's kind of nice because we don't have a lot of pests there. And I would say we probably have, let me think, about maybe six or seven raised beds.
Fairly good size. Nice.
I mean, they're not very big. And there was a little experiment that I'm going to undo, but Kathy had put down a bunch of wood pallets and filled those with dirt. And I think the wood slats were supposed to prevent the weeds from happening, but the weeds just grow around it. So I found that it wasn't, you know, like you said, life is a learning curve. It's a lot of trial and error. So I have plans. I'm going to take those up, and I'm going to ask the technology teacher to have his students build more raised beds.
Integration.
Right. Absolutely.
And I had a chat with the director of food services in Germantown, Beth Kelly.
Yes.
And she said the school is very small, so it doesn't make sense to have a salad bar. And the school's been using some local farm purchased foods, such as apples and pears, and getting Hudson Valley fresh milk. And I noticed that a lot of the schools are getting Hudson Valley fresh milk. And how did that happen? We'll talk about that. She has no problem with the Obama. Oh, we're going to talk about that too. The Obama controls of less fat, sugar, and salt. The whole wheat pasta definitely takes getting used to, she said. And then I heard complaints about the whole wheat tortillas that they crack, but she said it just requires a little bit of steaming. And it's all workable. They've partnered with Chefs on the Move in the past. Do you know about that? I don't know. Maybe you can tell us about that. And we're featured in a segment of Farmhouse Rules in 2014. And I have it's the School Garden Season 3, Episode 7 of Farmhouse Rules. And in the episode, Miss Fuller Ginsburg's daughter, Lorinda, a school principal in North Carolina, came to town and to help the Germantown Central School start a garden. Apparently that's when it started.
Okay.
And once the garden is up and running, Miss Fuller Ginsburg invited some of the students to dinner at her farm, where the menu features ingredients that they grew.
Sweet.
So that was the TV show.
It included garlic scapes, and I think there were green beans in it, too.
Yes.
I have to watch the episode again. It's on YouTube.
They dined on pasta primavera with handmade linguine. Corn on the cob, garden vegetables, salad, and for dessert they had some s'mores. And there are videos of the recipes right on the Food Network as well.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
sweet.
That was great fun to see that happened. And it was encouraging to people as well to see themselves. I didn't find the show. Maybe you find the show on...
I think it's on YouTube. I was told it was on YouTube. I saw it when it actually aired, so... I haven't seen it since. But.
And then since we're talking about the school rules, if I could just go into a little bit of like some of the changes, then we can talk about that. We'll take a little break because I've got a little stuff to play. But the Obama rules reduced fat, sugar, and salt and brought in smaller portions, more fruits and vegetables. Snacks and foods for fundraisers should be healthier. Tell me if I got any of this wrong. Mm-hmm. And altogether, cooking from scratch is on the rise, and salad bars are too. That's the good news. The changes, we have a new era now. The changes that Secretary Perdue is making are so far minor, but we don't know about the future. The first one is how much whole grain. It's been cut in half. And then schools can have exceptions. So they have long-range plans where they can have exceptions. That means they don't have to do anything while the exceptions are pending. And problems came with Asians and brown rice. They didn't want that. In the Northeast, bagels. People wanted bagels with nut that weren't whole wheat. And the tortillas cracking. And he's allowing more time for exceptions. Milk was 1% fat, and flavored milk was non-fat. Now, flavored is 1%, according to Purdue's rules, though it's not available yet, since the processors were geared to produce the non-fat version, and the kids got used to it. Hello, right? And there's a slowdown in the requirement for reduced sodium. So though foods overall are fresher, and there's a wider range of fruits and vegetables made from scratch, the overall approach to school lunch has also shifted. That was what you were pointing to.
Sandy,
yes, thank you.
It's good. We have students, to help each other.
We have to help me, yes. Students are now viewed more like customers rather than participants for federal reimbursement. Food service directors are not thinking more about they're thinking more about customizing or build your own, like Chipotle or Sweetgreen. And some places, students can order through apps. I mean, things are going all over the place here. They can order made-to-order subs, tacos, noodle bowls with spice and sauce bars. Pre-cooked foods still predominate, but it's losing popularity. Schools are starting to make their own pizza dough, salad dressings, and sauces. There's even a district in California that's taken over farms and growing enough tomatoes to make their own pizza sauce.
Sweet.
In Greenville, South Carolina, they're serving Alaska pollock with grits. In Waynesboro, Georgia, the local grain is being milled for flour, and they've figured out a way to make whole grain baked goods that taste more like white but meet federal requirements. So we've got some good news happening here. The Sausalito Marin City District has achieved USDA lunch-compliant all-organic meals.
Hallelujah.
One school is a charter school started by parents and community members, and the other is a public school. So, yeah, three cheers on that. So
that's exciting.
So things are happening, even though there's been a 20% cut to the Department of Agriculture that could curtail food funding, kitchen equipment, and local vegetables.
Of course.
So when we talk about parents being important, I think that's a key.
For sure.
Let's take a little break. And I'm going to play, I was at the Saugerties Farmers Market, well, I go there often, but I interviewed a couple of children. So let's just take 3 minutes and listen to my little interview with a couple of children.
Because this is our farm to school show. Where does this come from?
I'm holding up a carrot, by the way, a bunch of carrots.
The ground?
It comes from the ground. Do you eat them?
Yes.
How do you eat them usually?
You bite them.
You bite them. but do you wash them?
Yes.
You do. Do you peel them?
Yes.
You do. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
This one wants to take off.
Do you eat the greens on top?
No.
No. Have you ever tasted them?
No.
No. I'm not going to make you taste them now either, because they're not washed. I'm going to give the carrots back to the J&J farm. Well, maybe later. Have you ever gardened?
Yes.
You have? What have you grown?
Flowers, mostly.
Ah, but not vegetables.
Strawberries.
Ah. Do you have a farm or a garden at school?
No. Yes.
You do? Mm-hmm. Which school is that?
Cahill.
Cahill. And have you gardened there?
When I was, in kindergarten.
Oh, only in kindergarten. Oh. So do you go over and look and see what they're growing?
Sometimes.
Yeah? What grade are you in now?
I'm going to sixth grade.
Oh, good. And do they teach you anything about vegetables?
Not that much.
What's your favorite vegetable? Potatoes?
corn for me.
Corn.
Yeah. Potatoes. Yeah.
Potatoes. Lettuce. You like lettuce? Broccoli. Do you eat broccoli?
Yeah.
Yes.
How do you cook it?
To cook broccoli, you add water into a pot and you start cooking it, and you have to keep your eye on it. And after you cook it for a while, you have to taste it. What? It's how you cook broccoli.
Yes.
And then if it it has to taste right, so it tastes like cooked broccoli, and then it's finished.
Does the color change? Does it get brighter?
No.
You've never noticed broccoli getting brighter when you when it hits the heat?
No, oh, I think it only
take
gets
a look next time. No, take a look next time. Broccoli
like
always
bit,
gets brighter.
It gets like dark green.
It gets a brighter. It gets a brighter green.
Whenever I cook broccoli, it mostly burns. It turns brown.
It turns brown? Oh, I've cooked it too much. It turns into mush, huh? Do you ever put a sauce on it?
Oh, soy sauce.
Soy sauce. Some people like cheese sauce on broccoli.
Yeah, that's what I can say. Like a creamy cheese, usually.
Oh, good. And the potatoes that you like, how do you like them?
I like them anyway.
Oh, yeah. Anyway at all.
Yeah, mashed. When I have my potatoes, I like to have them buttered or mashed.
Yeah.
Same.
But do you bake them first or boil them?
Of course I bake them.
Or boil them?
No, why would you boil potatoes?
Well, some potatoes are very good boiled and not very good baked.
Mashed potatoes, you don't boil them.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far. But I think you're ready for a cooking class. Well, thank you very much. And if you'd like to give your names, you're welcome to do that. And if you don't want to, that's fine too. Well, thanks so much.
Well, that child obviously hasn't had a St. Patrick's meal where you boil red potatoes, but okay.
No. But she was pretty firm about it.
I would say.
I love that attitude.
Firm.
But it was interesting that her favorite vegetables were starches.
Yes.
Corn and potatoes.
Yes. Yep.
Well, we've had some really interesting things.
Well, they're mine too, actually.
Yeah. The broccoli story is a good story because when Noah Sheets came into the garden, we had a bunch of kids in the garden because we did hands-on cooking in our garden. And the kids came in and they were all excited to see a chef. You know, everybody loves a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
Many people do. And Noah was cooking away in the garden on his little stove broccoli. And he was sautéing it. And all of a sudden, you saw all the kids come out around the corner. And they said, you heard them smelling. And they said, French fries. I smell French fries. But it was broccoli. And within seconds, it was all gone.
Uh-huh.
They ate it all up. They just loved it.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's the environment. It's the environment, this what's going on around you, this, right?
The magnetizing.
Of food.
Uh-huh. Well, food is magnetizing.
That's right. It's our next revolution.
Yes.
You know, I think it's unfortunate that in a lot of schools, especially with elementary school kids, you know, it's teachers that have a hard time if they have, you know, large class size and kids that are unruly, and they often, you know, they have a reward system for good behavior, and the reward system is often candy, which seems so counterintuitive, right? Because we know that sugar causes more hyperactivity. And I would talk to the teachers and say, you know, you can give them a reward of carrots and kale, and they'll love it. They really will. I can guarantee that. And I remember there was a fifth grade class that was walking through our health fair. This is, you know, after we'd already established our program at Haldane. And we had a table where we had just a bunch of kale leaves, nothing on them, just raw kale leaves in a bowl that we had just harvested from the garden. And this fifth grade class, where the teacher had prior to this, you know, their coming, said that they just wanted their candy rewards. Those kids ate up the entire bowl of kale. They loved it and they wanted more.
Was it the curly kale or the Tuscan kale?
This particular one was curly kale. I do remember that.
That's tough to eat raw.
You know, we broke it up in little pieces and you know, it's sweet. Kale is sweet. Uh-huh. It's not bitter. It has a sweet flavor to it. And the kids loved it. And then, of course, you know, if you make kale chips, which we do all the time with our kids, not just with the Chef in the Classroom program, but I gave the school a dehydrator. Yes. And many people may not know this. Oh, but the best way to make kale chips is not in the oven. It's in a dehydrator. They never burn. They cook in about an hour, so it's perfect for a classroom setting because you just set up the dehydrator in the classroom. You know, the kids just put salt and olive oil on it, put it in there. An hour later, they're having a tasty snack. So if you want to talk more about that.
I like to add garlic powder and onion powder myself.
Sure.
Or even a pinch of cayenne if you're if you have a hot tongue. But actually, that's one of the things. The Garden Club, our first meeting is going to be next Thursday, and you just... my plan.
Do you have a dehydrator?
I have a dehydrator at home, but I was going to take a bunch of the kale and I was going to make crispy kale chips and bring it in to the students. The unfortunate part about having a garden at a school is most vegetables are ready during the summer. So,
except for the kale.
That's true.
Kale, winter berries.
The kale is wonderful, and
lettuces.
I'm going to bring the kale. Lettuce is a big one. I actually harvested a bunch of tomatoes the first day of school. Was last week. I picked about 30 tomatoes, and I gave a bunch of them to Beth Kelly, and she added them to the salad. So we're not actually creating a full meal for the school, but we're adding to the meals for the school, and it is coming from the garden. Last year, I picked a bunch of green beans in the middle of the summer, and we ended up just driving it down to the food pantry down the block.
That's
which was really good because it also helps the community members as well.
Well, I know what I'm going to do for my first girls in class now. Inspired by this show inspired by my friends, I'm going to do kale chips, of course.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'm going to do them in the dehydrator.
And you have a dehydrator. Where do you do the classes?
Well, we just got approval from Chris Van Dam, our food supervisor, to do it in our kitchen, in our main central kitchen.
Where's that?
At Roundout Valley Central High School kitchen.
Uh-huh. So they're letting people into the kitchens these days.
Oh, I have to say, we have been very fortunate. Chris has been very willing. We have our whole pantry program goes in and does processing in our kitchen. That is something that happened
and
over
that
the
a,
last
is
five
Is that
years.
A from scratch kitchen?
We do some things from scratch, and we warm up other things. Everybody
but
has
the kitchen has the equipment and
we
the
have the capacity to cook real food. Yes, we do. And we have salad bars. We have two Ann Cooper salad bars in our kitchens.
What's a Ann Cooper salad bar?
Ann Cooper.
Oh, Ann Cooper. Yes.
Yes.
I wanted to tell everybody a little bit about Ann Cooper. By the way, this is Eating It in the Hudson Valley, and I'm Phyllis Segura, your host, and I'm speaking with Nikki Kagan, Sandy McKelvey, and Kevin Flanagan.
Good job.
Got your names right, eh?
Well done.
And this is WGXE-FM out of Accra. Did I say it right?
I think so.
Accra. I always say it wrong because I always think it rhymes with okra, but it doesn't. It's Accra and Catskill, and we're in the Catskill Library in the Carnegie Room, just so in case anybody just tuned in. Anybody out there? If anybody's out there, by the way, there's also a Facebook page, and I put a lot of information in the notes. I don't know if the three of you have had a chance to take a look at that, but it's Eating It in the Hudson Valley Facebook page. Go to the notes for this particular show, Farm to School, and there's tons of stuff that I've been putting in there. But Chef Ann has been doing school food for a long time, but the news is that she just opened the School Food Institute. And one of the things they'll do is offer video courses about how to navigate local and federal institutions to get it done. She isn't hopeful that free school lunches and other food programs will get additional money these days, and most likely budgets will be cut. She says there's a need to be a change from public-private partnerships and foundations to people taking matters into their own hands. So everybody?
You're here.
Mm-hmm.
She runs the food services in Boulder, Colorado, and for those not familiar, she's written a few books, and you can go to the site and register for the newsletter, Chef Ann Foundation, and it's the School Food Institute. There's another person. You know Kate Adamick? Any of you know her? She wrote a book. She was doing the lunch tray. She just retired.
Right.
She did the food system solutions.
Yep.
And she wrote a book called Lunch Money. And it's a how-to book to unlock financial secrets to scratch cooking in the school food environment. So that might be something. And she used to run a 5-day Cook for America culinary boot camp to cover competence necessary to prepare food service directors, kitchen managers, lead cooks, and support staff to run professional cook from scratch school lunch operations. What do you think about that?
I think it's happening. I think we have Food Corps too that works on that. Ooh, ba boom.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Kevin, have you eaten in the Germantown cafeteria?
I have. I usually bring my own lunch, though.
See, this is the consumer.
I pay attention to the menu, and they do their best. Uh-huh. I have seen everything, like when they have something breaded, it's whole wheat breaded, and they always make sure that it says whole wheat breaded. When, you know, uh-huh. if it's like a chicken, chicken patty, it's always whole wheat breaded, or the, you know, the buns that they use are whole wheat. But there's always a fruit and there's always a vegetable. That's
anything local on the menu, besides the milk.
The milk is local.
She said apples and pears.
Oh, I see.
There we go.
Mostly,
yes.
But mm-hmm. she did notice that when she orders from the distributor, that things actually. A lot of things do come from the Hudson Valley, but I've noticed a lot of schools the apples and pear story seems to be consistent.
It's a low picking fruit.
I know.
Well, I think that it is. That's not such an unusual thing because it's probably
New York.
in the fall, not beyond November probably, but in the months of September, October, November, New York State apples are probably the cheapest.
Yes,
and of course schools. When they order food, they have to get the lowest bid.
Yes.
I mean, that's what's so challenging about getting local produce or any kind of local foods on the school menu, because there's the bottom line. It's always going to be the bottom line. Talk to any business director. They're going to go with the lowest bid.
Sure.
Now, if you have a food service director who is enthusiastic and proactive about having a farm-to-school program, there are ways to go around that. There's geographic preference. There are all sorts of ways to do your bidding. In New York State, New York is one of eight states in the country that are involved in a USDA pilot fruit and vegetable project. They've been doing it for about 2 years. And so there are vendors across New York State that are USDA-approved vendors that schools can buy from, and they can use some of their commodity dollars to buy fresh fruits and vegetables. Not all of them are local, but many of them are local in New York State. And that has improved the number of fresh fruits and vegetables in a lot of schools in New York. So that has been successful.
A lot of them are getting the foods from local farms, too. Do they do that in the roundout?
Yes. Our distributors definitely use local farms. We're grateful to have the Roundout Valley Growers. We have a pretty good united group of farmers.
Right, that's a big organization.
Bruce Davenport of Davenport Farms was one of the first farmers to say, I'll do anything that I can to help you when I started out.
Great.
And it was the Roundout Valley Growers that gave their support of farm to school, and I think, drew the attraction and we have the ability to grow for our community.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a school district that is close to a large farming community like Roundout, that's easier
sure.
than in schools that are not that close. Like, so I'm in Putnam County, and I've also worked with schools in Dutchess County. And, of course, there are farms in Dutchess County. But it's not easy. It is not easy for schools to procure local vegetables on a large scale, in particular if you have a school that has, say over 3,000 students with one centralized kitchen. They, might be able to do it once a month. They might be able to procure, carrots 1 month or lettuce 1 month, once during that month. But we're not talking about something where you'll see on a school menu where every single week there are local items. That we've not, mm-hmm. we haven't gotten there in New York yet.
Uh-huh.
In some small school districts, you will occasionally see that in some small school districts. It's tricky. And as I said, I think what I really want to emphasize more than anything is that it is entirely the school food service director who, they're either on board or they're not. So, mm-hmm. I give an example of the school district that I'm in that, you know, if they don't really understand the importance of local and they don't understand the importance of fresh,
right,
then it's not going to happen. You know, you can push and you can push.
But don't you need the parents to be able to inform the situation?
You do, but you know, it's you need to have, you know, almost superheroes who are going to, you know, advance the cause. And often you'll get one or two, and you might be looking at some of them. you know,
we pushed and we pushed hard, and but we weren't as nice as we are now. And
you have to have your advocates out there. Parents are very pleased, of course. They'll be pleased, but they're not necessarily going to be doing the legwork. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many parents have emailed me, have thanked me on the playground for things that have, you know, that I've worked on in the schools that have been successful. Yes. They really want to see it happen. But do they have time to
it's
put in...
It's the better you than me story.
So...
Yeah, yeah.
It's work.
I want to talk just for a brief moment about what the Sylvia Center at Kachke Farm in Kinderhook is doing with the Germantown School.
Yes, here we go.
They have received... They were awarded a 5-year grant from the Berkshire Taconic Foundation.
Wonderful.
To promote healthy food for all. And last year, they held family cooking classes throughout Hudson with a $50,000 grant. And this year, they'll be working with the Germantown schools to create a curriculum that can be integrated with the Common Core standards, and they've got $60,000, and it's just begun. The idea, according to the director of the program, Jen So, is to create something that provides the school a way to carry out the program into the future, and it's still in the conversation phase. What would we want to tell them to look for?
Well, I think, well, we're going to probably start with a grade. We're probably going to, you know, make it fourth grade or third grade or something. To start with one specific
right.
class and make the curriculum around that. And I have been speaking a little bit to one of the fourth grade teachers. Again, it is very fledgling. I mean, it's right now the food that we grow in the garden tends to just go to the members of the garden club. So this isn't just
about the garden. This is about integrating, you know, food and nutrition information to everybody and keeping it within the curriculum.
Yes.
You know, let's say there you have the history class and you're talking about the beginnings of civilization and it depended on agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Things
spices,
like that.
Grains.
Yeah.
Well, I could speak about the Sylvia Center because they are a wonderful organization that they started their most of their work in New York City schools and some of the, you know, the neediest schools in the Bronx and in Brooklyn, and they started out doing after-school cooking programs, and then they started recently doing programs, you know, during the school hours, where they would have just, you know, just like we do on a smaller level, have the chefs come in and work with these kids with local fresh vegetables, and then have the kids in the city go to their farm at Kachke Farms, mm-hmm. you know, and do the same thing on the farm, you know, understand where the food comes from, you know, on the farm. So I think it's wonderful that they're doing this program now in Germantown.
Yeah,
it's a great organization.
Congratulations.
And they're, again, one of the organizations that I would say is a great sharer. They've shared a lot with me, shared recipes with me, shared curriculum, equipment, resources, really great organization. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do in Germantown.
They have recipes on their website, as do you. Your website is...
HudsonValleyFarmToSchool.org.
Okay. What I've noticed and what I'd like to work on is actually making the recipes more child-friendly. I've noticed, and I looked at yours, I looked at all the others, and they're more for people who already know how to cook. They're standard recipes, the way recipes seem to always be written, but not so much directed for child mind. There's a couple of books, cooking books, the one by Marion Cunningham, seems to be one of the better books along those lines. It's a cookbook. And
I wish I brought it along.
We're going to give... I don't have it.
No,
I just ordered it. Yeah, but
everybody
a
knows
few of them.
Phyllis is a chef, too, so she's deep into this.
Actually, let me do a little plug for me. I teach it at Ulster BOCES, sometimes cooking classes, and the class that we just put up is for Chinese cooking, And it's on September 25th, and so many people have signed up. I only let 10 people in a class because I can't deal with any more than that. Nobody really learns anything. But now we're going to a second day because there's so many people. Sweet. So if anybody wants to sign up, it's take out Chinese food, except you make it, and I'll show you how. And I don't know, I've got so many papers here, I can't find anything. But, oh no, I know where it is. So you can call Ulster BOCES, and we'll get that second class going. The first one is September 25th, which is a Monday from 6 to 9 in the evening. It's not for children, sorry. And the second one that we just started today would be on the following day, which is Tuesday.
Well, I can tell you that going back to the Sylvia Center, not last year, but the year before, they did come in. There was a seed to plate program, and it was an extracurricular activity, and they did a lot of child-friendly recipes there. So it's not a book. It's more like a stapled packet, but I wish I brought this along with me.
And
but
they were written.
They are very child-friendly, easy to make kind of.
I'll be posting a few of them on the Eating It in the Hudson Valley Facebook page.
Oh, great.
I mean, here we've got something like, let's just quick do one. It's just homemade applesauce, and then I cite the tools. So you put the tools up. This is Marion Cunningham did this too. So, and then like making applesauce is like one of the simplest things you can instruct children in doing. So go there and you'll see this. I'm not going to read this through. You don't want to hear me read this. But but what we want to do, we're going to play a little game. We've got a few minutes. Is there anything anybody wants to cover that we haven't covered?
The greenhouse.
Well, I've got one. The greenhouse, right.
The greenhouse. Yeah. You said you wanted to talk about that.
I did. The Germantown School has a greenhouse.
We do.
But it's not active yet.
It is not functioning. No, at this time it is not functioning. But it's there. It's fun. I started in 2014, and that was the year that they started building it. Mm-hmm. I believe it initially came from a particular student that it was an Eagle Scout project, and it ended up catching like wildfire, and the next thing you know, the Board of Education approved to build a greenhouse, and mm-hmm. so the greenhouse is there. We have a capital project that's going to be making some improvements towards the building over the next couple of years, and they're going to give us water access and ventilate the greenhouse a little bit better, because right now it's just a big glass house. Mm-hmm. In the garden club, though, we will probably put our seedlings in there in March, I would say. Once the outside temperatures get to about 70 degrees, the inside greenhouse temperature gets to about 100, and that mm-hmm. can definitely damage the plants, which I trial and error found out last year. But so, I mean, I'm starting to use it, but I can't use it throughout the year.
Sounds
at this
like
point,
you might want to get together with a couple of farmers.
Yes, yes. Actually, the Sylvia Center, I've actually been talking to them about some of the stuff that would need to be doing.
Help you do that.
Because they're based, I believe, at Catchkey Farms, which is in Kennebunk.
Yes, exactly. There's one thing, though. There's an obstacle. A lot of people told me that there was a garden at the Taconic Hill School. And I did speak with the superintendent, Dr. Neil Howard, there. And, there is a greenhouse, but it's not being used. He said there were obstacles. They couldn't overcome them. The ag teacher and the students used to take care of it, but there was no one during the summer. The kids around there already work on farms, and it's a rural community, so they weren't much into it. So the only thing they have there is the subsidized milk from Hudson Valley Fresh via the Farm On program. So if anybody wants to
go help that Taconic Skills.
Figure it out.
Which held.
Get a grant and help figure it out.
They held many, many conferences in the beginning of our work at that school.
And something went flat.
Things ebb and flow. They ebb and flow, just like nature, the wind, the rain, the trees.
Well, we've got 5 minutes. We've got about 5 minutes to go, and I wanted to play very quickly. If there's anything else that you want to say right now, I'm going to play something, and we can play a little game.
Well, I was just going to say, I wanted to sort of wrap the issue up of what happens to gardens, what happens to greenhouses, you know, when, you know, you have those heroes and then they leave. It's essential that the gardens and the greenhouses really get incorporated into the curriculum in the school. If they're not incorporated, if the schools do not embrace them, then they will eventually die. And so working with schools to create curriculum that really incorporates into what they're learning on a, you know, every day in their lesson plans mm-hmm. is key. And then they'll survive.
Good. And on that note, I'm going to play this.
We are the rainbow of foods that you should have in all your meals. Eat your rainbow every day and great is how you will feel. We'll give you essential vitamins and also minerals. So when you get hungry, make sure you sit and eat a rainbow. Let's start with the color red. We are some essential foods to eat.
We are the apple, red cabbage, tomato, and cherry. Red pepper, red onion.
Okay, each one of you, name a red vegetable, Kevin.
Tomato.
Pepper. You said pepper. Beet.
Purple, but that's good. Yellow.
I think corn. Red.
Yellow peppers.
Squash.
Orange.
Carrot.
Another orange. An orange vegetable.
Squash.
Squash. Thanks, Phyllis.
Sweet potato.
Sweet potato.
Oh, good job.
Green.
Brussels sprouts, my favorite.
Lettuce.
Kale.
Yay.
Yay.
Yay. Well, thank you all so much. We've got 4 minutes left. And what should we do? Just play Little Richard playing One Meatball?
I want to just say that parents make the difference and that together with children, you know, the children need to advocate for themselves and we need to get in there and create change because our health is our wealth.
Okay. Let's meet again in April.
Okay.
We're going to do the second round.
I just wanted to add to that, we also need to inspire the children to be motivated to like their vegetables and like the process of gardening, which has happened to a couple of the garden club members, I must say. But but yeah, so that's really important because it starts there.
And I will also mention, I will agree with both of you that it's the parents, it's the community. It's not just in the school. We've got to bring it to the community. So, you know, the kids will get educated in the schools, and then the kids educate their parents, and mm-hmm. healthy eating happens at home, and that's where the change begins.
I want to thank the three of you from the bottom of my heart for showing up, especially you, Sandy, coming all the way from Cold Spring.
Thank you.
I'm delighted that you showed up, and I hope this will bring some
thank you for
good
having
news.
Us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And let's go out with Little Richard.